Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Boy, TGIF for me. I don't know about you. I don't know how I got through this week. But here we are. Now, a movie came out today about Ayn Rand. And, the movie's coming out, Atlas Shrugged, today. And it focuses on Ayn Rand's 1957 opus and the free market ideas it espouses. And I want to talk about it for a minute because what you don't know is that the author of Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand, was an individualist. She was not a conservative. Attention, ditto heads. She knew big business was as big a threat to capitalism as government bureaucrats. Now, many of you ditto heads don't understand this. And in that regard, I could say I'm an individualist, not a conservative. And it's very hard to get that message across to so many people who have been brainwashed by various and sundry interests, okay? Atlas Shrugged. Who was it? What was it about? When did you first read Atlas Shrugged? Probably in college. And how did it influence you, if it did influence you at all? I remember when I was in college quite a while ago, this was a popular book. I didn't read it myself, but a lot of people did who I went to school with, and they just glowed about it. They said, wow, you got to read it. I didn't really understand it at the time. I leafed through it. It didn't seem salacious enough. There was no sex in it. There was nothing about cars, sports cars, Vermont ski lodges with women lying on rugs, nothing. I mean, I wasn't interested in the book myself. And now it's come around and people are really interested in this whole idea of Atlas Shrugged and individualism and individualists. And when Ayn Rand created the character of Wesley Mooch, good name, Mooch, right? She sort of anticipated Barney Frank, the dimwit from Massachusetts. Mooch is the economic czar she was anticipating in Atlas Shrugged, whose every action weakens the economy, which in turn gives him the excuse to demand even broader powers. This is an incredible story. We're living through Atlas Shrugged right now. But for you to read Atlas Shrugged or watch the movie this weekend and say, it's just an anti-government movie, or an uncritical celebration of big business, you're going to miss the point. The real villain of Atlas Shrugged is a big businessman, railroad CEO James Taggart, whose crony capitalism does more to bring down the economy than all of Mooch's regulations. He might be the Jeffrey Immelt of today, of GE, in my opinion. Or he might be, let us say, George Soros, another villain of our times, whose crony capitalism has almost destroyed the free market itself. What you should understand that in Rand's novel, as in real life, self-described rapacious capitalists can turn out to be the worst enemies of capitalism. Now, that does not fit in easily with many of you ditto heads who have a narrative about the free market and about conservatism, you see. So there's an awful lot to talk about it, if you want to. If not, we'll move on. I know you'd rather talk about Obama and do something about the mendacity of Barack Obama rather than talk about a book. Okay, we can go there. So we're going to talk about the mendacity of Barack Obama, the biggest fraud in the history of the presidency, on the Savage Nation today. We're going to find out finally if he's a sociopath, as many of us have feared. You know, many of us are two-faced. Let's be clear. It's the nature of human beings going all the way back to the beginning of time. People are actors. You know, the world's a stage and all that. Shakespeare had it pegged pretty good. But Obama is perhaps both a bad actor and a good actor, or a great actor and a very poor actor. If you look at this man's eyes, They're chillingly frightening, incidentally. If you see the videotape of him speaking to Democrats yesterday, when nobody was watching, he thought, you see a... But you don't have to actually see that face to know what he's actually doing to this country. I received an article this morning from a gentleman who lives out of the country, whose name is John Walker. It's on michaelsavage.com. I can't read the entire article, but I'm going to read you a piece of it. He says, the article's entitled Opponents or Enemies. In any conflict, he says, it's a deadly error to mistake or underestimate the adversary's capabilities. Okay, around the globe, what was once confidently deemed Western civilization is in an end-stage battle with champions of a collectivist and statist ideology, which over the last century has enacted programs of redistributive taxation, borrowing, and spending, whose unsustainability has now become self-evident, and which, unless the present course is altered, will collapse in at most 10 years. Now, this gentleman is a billionaire, by the way, and he built his fortune in the real American way, honestly. He goes on. Further, the other effects of these policies have led to demographic collapse, that means the immigrant flood, in the societies which have adopted them, crippled capital formation, and the creation of productive enterprises, and have been used as a justification for mass immigration from regions hostile to the culture and values of the West, which have been responsible for its prosperity. Let me pause right there. Used as a justification for mass immigration from regions hostile to the culture and values of the West, which have been responsible for its prosperity. Do you have to look any further than the Muslim takeover of London, Londonistan? You have people with 16 children on welfare who don't work, who hate England and want to overthrow it. He then goes on, because I've said the same things myself. Those who would destroy a society destroy first its language. As Orwell observed, when the terms of discourse are corrupted, the corruption spreads into every domain the language is used to debate. So this is a very complex article, but it's worth reading. And he said the present-day culprits identify themselves as progressives or liberals. But take a step back and ponder how manipulative this is. If you're a progressive, then you must obviously be on the side of progress, even though the outcome of the policies you advocate will ultimately roll back all of the advances in individual liberty and prosperity made since the Enlightenment. Amen, brother. If you're a liberal, surely you must advocate liberty, notwithstanding that the consequences of your prescriptions will be descent of society into serfdom for the masses, deemed property of the state, ruled by an unelected, unaccountable elite. The so-called progressives or liberals are not advocates of progress or liberty. They are enemies of them. And the sooner we champions of liberty acknowledge what they are, the better our slim chances for defeating them will be. Let me pause right there, because we are facing a battle for our survival right now. Obama is, of course, the champion of everything wrong with Western civilization right now. Obama is the champion of these anti-liberal liberals. Obama is the epitome of everything that is deceitful about the so-called progressives. And he says, what is to be done? What is to be done? He said, in the middle of World War II, would it have made sense for Roosevelt and Churchill to have arranged a secret meeting with Hirohito and Tojo to try to, quote, work out their differences and find the middle ground where, say, Imperial Japan would be allowed to keep half of its conquests in the Pacific? Of course not. Japan was the enemy, and only its definitive defeat could undo the damage its conquest had wrought. He said, enemies of individual liberty control the high ground today and most of the institutions through which they have made their long march in the last half century. And they perceive themselves as winning. With every generation they educate, inform, entertain, and rule. They create more dependent subjects who acquiesce to their rule and groom a new self-perpetuating class of elite. I can't read much more because I'm not good at reading other people's work, but this one is incredible. Let me summarize John's main points, and you can go to Michael Savage to download it. He said, number one, you can't negotiate with the enemy. You have to defeat them. We must defeat the progressives. We must destroy them. There is no reasonable, achievable compromise between liberty and tyranny, freedom and slavery. We must vanquish them, ensure that their spawn cannot reinfect society. We will never defeat them as long as we view them as opponents who play by the same rules and share the same goals as we. They are our enemies. Here are a few things we can do, starting immediately. One, reclaim the language from the enemy. We should have a swear jar for every time we utter the words liberal or progressive. Except in scornful irony. He says, can we use statist, collectivist, socialist, or communist? Now, I've been using the word communist continuously for a year now. I will not use the word liberal. I will not use the word socialist. I will call them as they are, communist. I've been doing it for a year. Do not trade with the enemy. Do not patronize businesses which support enemy causes. Did you hear that? On the local scale, telling the owner of the pharmacy who's posted a petition supporting socialized medicine that he's just lost your business and why he's lost it will have an impact. Don't be taken in by enemy propaganda. Don't entrust your children to the enemy. Do not become indebted to the enemy. Do not hire the enemy. Are you an employer? Why should you pay those who support the destruction of your livelihood? Don't hire them. Roll back the enemy's gains and how to deal with the enemy. It's all in there. And you got to understand we're fighting for the survival of ourselves, our family, and America. The liberals, the progressives are the enemy. They are the enemy of everything you believe in. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. How I want it for you. You'll never know.
All right, I'm trying to talk about Atlas Shrugged by Rand, but I don't think anybody's interested in this. But you should understand something. The movie's coming out from a novel first published in 1957. It's a very important book, but it's most important that you understand that this book does not give you the license to simply become a rapacious capitalist along the lines of General Electric, in my opinion, who, you know, benefits from the benefits of Western civilization and of America and the American system, but rigs the system like in a casino and pays no income taxes. That's not capitalism of the type we're talking about. General Electric, run by Jeffrey Immelt, and paying no taxes and in owning the presidency and owning channels that support this corrupt government, is a great threat to our society. That's why you have stooges that have no talent whatsoever. Talentless communists who pass themselves off as entertainers who have a real message for you, progressives. They're communist slime who would have been good propagandists for Joseph Stalin. That's why you must understand that they're a great threat to capitalism. They're a great threat to our system of government. They want to usher in the collapse of freedom. So I'm not going to talk about this much more. And I got to tell you, what does it mean, Atlas Shrugged? What does it actually mean? You know, you think about it. It's an interesting title. What does the word Atlas Shrugged, what does the title Atlas Shrugged mean? Well, Atlas was a titan of Greek mythology. The giant who holds the weight of the world on his shoulders, right? But what's the significance of the title Atlas Shrugged? It can be seen in the conversation between the characters of Francisco D'Anconia and Hank Reardon, in which D'Anconia asks of Reardon what sort of advice he would give to Atlas upon seeing that the greater the titan's effort, the heavier the world bore down on his shoulders. Reardon, unable to answer, Francisco gives his own response to shrug. In other words, let it go to hell. I've long joked about the Italian shrug. The Italian shrug. You know, I have Italian friends, older guys. If you ask them a question, they don't want to answer it. They shrug. In other words, they're ducking. And all it takes for this world to collapse and fall into the hands of the Soroses and the Immelts and the other rapacious crony capitalists, like them in my opinion, is for me to shrug and for you to shrug. The day we shrug, it's the end of the world as you know it. We will have a statist Stalinist system where we have almost no individual liberty. Believe me, make no mistake about it. That's what's at stake. And they put this stooge in power. They put this stooge in power. This fraud. Obama was put in power by these people to try to take away the last vestiges of freedom, in my estimation. So I could talk about it if you want. Obama remarks caught by open mic. He criticizes Republicans, that you would expect. Did you know that he criticized federal workers during a Chicago fundraiser? You didn't catch that one, did you? He said some government workers are slugs and not trying to do their job. Boy, did he ever get that one right. He should have said most government workers are slugs and have no job to do, by the way. Then at least he would have said something right. The old adage, you know, even a stopwatch is correct twice a day. 1-800-449-9255, michaelsavage.com. You want to talk about Atlas Shrugged, or is that too much? Too little? Obama's ratings are the lowest ever. He raked in $2 million yesterday in a series of fundraisers in Chicago, yet his poll numbers are as low as they've ever been. Why do you think Obama is loved by the ultra-rich progressive communists and disliked by most everyone else, left, right, and center? And now that Trump is leading all other Republicats, I think he can beat Obama, incidentally. In fact, he is the character out of Atlas Shrugged who can save this country. We need a rapacious capitalist with compassion like him to take on the communist scum. We need somebody like him who's tough enough to take on the communist scum and put them in their place. Let me show you how phony Obama is. His wife is always lecturing us about healthy eating and vegetable gardens and grow cabbage and grow carrots. Come on, boys and girls, right out of Stalin's Russia, using children as agitprop, kiddie prop. Plant your carrots, boys and girls. And what did they eat yesterday at Obama's Chicago fundraising event? Well, the usual lobster, fish. But of course, there was the ever-present short ribs. The ever-present favorite of the Obama White House, the artery-blocking short ribs. You don't see the conflict. You don't see the double talk. You don't see, what's the difference? You see it all. What can you do about it? Now, so let's go back to Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. It's a tough first name. Many people say Ayn Rand. It's Ayn Rand, Eine kleine Nachtmusik. She herself, by the way, came to this country without a dime in her pocket. She was an immigrant woman from Russia. She arrived penniless in the U.S. in 1925. Today, if she showed up with the same tale, liberals would give her a driver's license and register her to vote for the Communist Party USA, meaning the Democrat Party USA. But she was not a liberal. She was not a conservative. She was an individualist. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Savage.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind which one you are. I'd like to wake up.
So we're talking about Atlas Shrugged, the movie, you know, Ayn Rand, and I don't know that many of you have read it or you want to read it or you want to even talk about it. The most important thing for you to remember, if it's discussed at all, is that she herself was an individualist, not a conservative. And she knew that big business, which is was as great a threat to capitalism as government bureaucrats. This is something that needs to be discussed, because many of you have been falsely educated by Rush Limbaugh, in particular, in my opinion, who continuously slams how good the free market is and how the free market will result in good results all the time. And nothing can be further than the truth. It's a simplistic and a ultimately fallacious viewpoint. I don't know whether he understands that himself. He must. He's a very intelligent man. But the fact of the matter is, such self-described capitalists who care about nothing but the bottom line are often the very worst enemies of a society and of capitalism itself. And that doesn't fit in easily with the pro-business narrative that is being pushed about Ayn Rand today. In other words, the Republicans are retailing Ayn Rand as a proponent of unheeded capitalism. You know, she herself also, by the way, was a devout atheist, which set her against the Christian orientation of the movement. She got in trouble with William F. Buckley Jr. When she introduced herself to him in her thick Russian accent and said to him, "You are too intelligent to believe in God." And so then there was a review of her book, Atlas Shrugged, by Whitaker Chambers. Does the name ring a bell? In Buckley's National Review, which was really a smear of her. And it set the tone for the relationship with the conservative movement ever since. Very similar to the way I've been smeared by the National Review and the others on the didactic fake conservative right. They despise me in the same way that they despise her, because she was an individualist. She was not a Republican. I'm an individualist. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent, not a Republican. So you understand what I'm saying? The National Review and the others have some brilliant writers, but fundamentally, they're doctrinaire Republican party organizations or organs. She also lived her life as an exemplary feminist. Did you know that? Even though she denied it by calling herself a male chauvinist. There's a lot to her life story that I don't want to go into. She also opposed the Vietnam War. She said, I am against the war in Vietnam and have been for years. In my view, we should fight fascism and communism when they come to this country. During the 60s, she declared, I am an enemy of racism, and advised opponents of school busing, if you object to sending your children to school with black children, you'll lose for sure, because right is on the other side. So her life ought to make her a real hero of the left, but they're too doctrinaire and usually too uneducated to even understand this. They're so inflexible that they've already made up their mind she's no good. 1-800-449-8255. Ayn Rand was a conservative? No. Liberal? No. She was an individualist. The movie that's coming out is called Atlas Shrugged. And so as we approach tax day, which is, hey, it's today, with more of our tax dollars going to gigantic, grotesque, corrupt, heartless government, and subsidies for companies like General Electric, in my opinion, and for other big businesses who pay no taxes, okay, you must remember that it's individualism that has kept Atlas Shrugged amongst the best-selling novels of all time. You want to talk about it, you can call me. I got many callers on many topics, okay? How did you get into this book? Or do you want to do straight out, you know, news? There's a lot of news. How about the mendacity of Barack Obama? What does the mendacity mean? Well, it's an interesting article. And the man who wrote this article for the American Thinker, Steve McCann, said that he has 45 years in the business community. He's dealt with an overwhelming variety of people of all races and political philosophies, many who are honest and many who had no concept of honor and integrity. And he said, among them, there were those who would do or say anything to achieve their ends and do so with a straight face and an air of self-confidence that would deceive the most gullible. He says, while I've always been wary of and have written about Obama's dishonesty, after his speech of the 13th regarding the federal budget, one that was chock full of lies, deceit, and crass fear-mongering, it must be said that Barack Obama is the most dishonest, deceitful, and mendacious person in a position of power he has ever witnessed. This is a culmination of 4 years of outright lies and narcissism, that he relies on his skin color to intimidate, either outright or by insinuation, those who oppose his radical agenda only adds to his audacity. Now here's a punchline, because I've said the same thing for years. It is apparent that Obama has gotten away with his character flaws his entire life, aided and abetted by the sycophants around him. Thus, he is who he is and cannot change. Here's the key question, though. Is he a compulsive liar or a sociopath? And he gives a definition. A sociopath is typically defined as someone who lies incessantly to get their way and does so with little concern for others. A sociopath is often goal-oriented. Lying is focused, it is done to get one's way. Sociopaths have little regard or respect for the rights and feelings of others. Sociopaths are often charming and charismatic, but they use their talented social skills in manipulative and self-centered ways. A compulsive liar is defined as someone who lies out of habit. Lying is their normal and reflexive way of responding to questions. Compulsive liars bend the truth about everything, large and small. For a compulsive liar, telling the truth is very awkward and uncomfortable, while lying feels right. Compulsive lying is usually developed in early childhood due to being placed in an environment where lying was necessary. And I pause right there. The writer of this article says, I came to the United States as a survivor of the Second World War. I spent my early years alone on the streets of a totally destroyed city somewhere in Central Europe. In order to survive, I had to steal food where I could and lie in order to survive. I spent a good part of my life, even after coming to America and being adopted, battling those inbred impulses. It was a never-ending struggle with successes and failures, but I was able to finally defeat those demons. He says, what I say about Barack Obama, I do not do lightly, but because I fear greatly for this country. He goes on. Again, I'm quoting from another article linked on Michael Savage, The Mendacity of Barack Obama by Steve McCann. Let me summarize. Today, so much power is now vested in the office of President of the United States that honor and integrity must be a hallmark of a president's character. It is not with Barack Obama. He may well be the most dishonest and disingenuous occupant of the Oval Office in history, and will do more damage to the nation than all his predecessors combined. His failings can no longer be excused by this historical deference or timidity fostered by race, with the euphemisms of spin, obfuscation, fabrication, or politics being used to avoid the truth. Obama is extremely adept at exploiting the celebrity culture that has overwhelmed the society, as well as the erosion of the education system that has created a generation or more of citizens unaware of their history, culture, as well as historical ethical standards based on Judeo-Christian teaching. Look, a lot of people are very brilliant people, and they're writing a lot of great things, and this is another great article along the way. So we can talk about these things, or we can just focus on dumb, you know, stuff like budget and this, and, you know, budget and this and that, and, you know, Leprechaun says that the birth issue was not important, and then the skank girl, who is normally a conservative, now agrees with him to stay going on his show. And then the other one with the blackboards agrees with him, even though he's been thrown off Fox News. Now he's becoming a mini a Margot kind of preacher. His next stage is going to be praise the Lord in a tent somewhere. You wait and see. I was the first one onto the blackboards. I mean, I don't take credit for, you know, harming him, because I have no intent to harm the guy. He was a harmless schmendrick, schmeck, but you wait and see. The next thing is going to be a Hail Jesus on a stage with the eyes rolling. And maybe he'll go to the level of snakes and drinking some fluids that were popular amongst the Jimmy Carter crowd. I don't know where he's going to end up. Texas John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to comment on just how, well, you just said a minute ago about how I just wanted to comment on just, I think that your intelligence, your political intelligence supersedes Rush Limbaugh's by tenfold. So that's all I wanted to get on the air.
Well, I'm not here to bash Rush. He was a pioneer in the field of talk radio. He should always have that honor. However, I think he has greatly limited the discussion by being so two-dimensional with regard to the free market in particular. Let's put it to you that way. And his naked support for Republicans, it's kind of embarrassing.
Well, I think he's multidimensional.
I'm sorry, I missed that?
I said I think that he's multidimensional. He doesn't approach it from the right direction.
Well, I don't know what that means.
Well, basically that it's his paradigm is not really broken down to the where the listener can really understand. It's like it comes from a multitude.
All right, well, I don't really want to get trapped into talking about him. You know, God bless him. I hope he continues to stay in radio for a very long time. But the fact of the matter is there's room for all of us in talk radio, but understand that there are varieties of understanding of various topics amongst all of us who have studied these things. It's that simple. I would say Rush Limbaugh can take you to the level of a high school education with regard to what conservatism or individual means. And if you want to get a graduate education, you're in the right place. That's all. David on WOR in New York, welcome to the program.
Hey, Michael, how you doing? Regarding Atlas Shrugged, I had read it years ago, and there was a very profound quote in it, which I remembered, and it personifies everything you're talking about as far as capitalism goes.
Right.
Because there's one thing where she said, talking about like some greedy capitalist, that he wasn't out to make money, he was out to get it. And that's what the whole thing of our, you know, military, industrial, corporate,
yes,
you know, government complex is.
Or a guy like Jeff Immelt, who flies with the president to Brazil, runs a corporation that's transnational, God bless it, earns a fortune here in America and pays no U.S. income taxes and gets away with it because he owns the government. That's exactly who Ayn Rand was talking about, this kind of crony capitalism. It's a nightmare.
You know what? Which is why the Chinese are spanking our sorry butts, because we aren't even producing good. What little we produce in this country, we don't produce good. Everything's made for instant obscurity or to be replaced in 2 years. And so that's why the whole American economy is on decline. One other thing, if I could add, talking about Obama, he's kind of the Atlas Shrugged, only the contrapositive to it, in that. An Atlas Shrugged, if you have.
Yeah, I love your word, contrapositive. Exactly. He's the exact opposite of the hero.
In
other words, he's the villain.
Yeah, sure. In Atlas Shrugged, basically like all the elite, like John Galt and all the others. It's been a while since I read it, like found their way to this valley. And talking about how Atlas shrugged, they just let the place go to hell in a handbag, and then they're going to come out and they're going to put everything together. Well, that's exactly what this administration is doing, but the contrapositive end. They're just letting everything go to hell in a handbag, and they're going to take over. And you know, they've taken over.
Let me give you another example. Arianna Huffington is being sued in a class action lawsuit by bloggers who said that she used them to make her fortune and then paid them nothing. This is another example of crony capitalism. Remember who Arianna Huffington was. She pretended to be a Republican conservative when she first arrived on the scene with her then husband. You remember her?
Arianna.
And then somewhere along the line about, I don't know, 17 years ago, she appeared one day on Saturday Night Live with Al Franken and became a liberal because she saw which way the wind was blowing and she knew that the so-called progressives were more gullible than the conservatives and she could get further. She could gull them. And sure enough, she got a payday of over $300 million by using the moronic bloggers who wrote for her for nothing for in the hopes that they would get some exposure. You know what I'm saying?
She wasn't out to make money.
She didn't give them a dime of it.
Why should she? She's a progressive. She's a liberal. She's a forward thinker. She doesn't need to. These are the pawns under her feet who are there to serve her.
Right. So this is a tie-in to the Atlas Shrugged. And I thank you very much for your call. Again, there's a class action lawsuit filed yesterday by labor activist and former Huffington Post blogger Jonathan Tessini. And he seeks at least $105 million in damages from the Huffington Post and AOL for approximately the 9,000 bloggers who wrote for HuffPo but did not receive compensation for their work. Now, you have to understand something. Tessini won a similar case against the New York Times and the U.S. Supreme Court in 2001, which prevented newspapers from licensing the work of freelancers for distribution via electronic databases without explicit permission from or compensation to the writers. Very interesting. So the question is, should bloggers be paid for their efforts? I think they should. But here's an example of a fraudulent progressive, in my estimation, Arianna Huffington, a rapacious crony capitalist, who played the progressives like the fools that most of them are. But I want to ask you something. Has Mr. Tessini read Animal Farm? It's an allegory of how leftist thought can harness effort that in the end is worse in every way than the system it replaces. Let me give you a relevant quote from the end of Animal Farm. You ready for this? Somehow it seemed as though the farm had grown richer without making the animals themselves any richer, except, of course, for the pigs and the dogs. And then there's another quote from Animal Farm. Quote, the creatures outside looked from pig to man and from man to pig and from pig to man again, but already it was impossible to say which was which. Close quote. I believe they were talking about Arianna Huffington. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Most people don't know what the heck's going on around them. I mean, you go out at night, you walk in the streets, you say, what am I, crazy, worrying about all this stuff? You could become like Atlas Shrugged. You ask yourself, if you're me, Michael Savage, who's always had the world on his shoulders. You know, when I was a kid, 6 years old, I remember people used to talk. I told you how I grew up. It was a different world, so forgive me for reminiscing. The parents were all married. It was usually a man and a woman. In fact, 99 to 100% men and women. There were no two daddies, no two mommies. There were no single parents. Everyone had a mother and a father, usually grandparents around. And if we hung out in anyone's house or apartment, the other adults might be there at the same time, and they would talk about the children, and you could overhear them while you were playing with the other kids. And they would look at the kids and analyze you. It was a strange thing, openly. And I remember them saying about me, he seems to have the world, the weight of the world on his shoulders. I remember that statement about me. I didn't even know what it meant. In fact, I walked around with a slight hunch after that for fear that they saw me as a hunchback. But it was because of certain events in the family that gave me a weightiness to my being, and that's okay. We used to say in the 70s, an old soul. Remember that one? You're an old soul. That used to be a big deal between people. I was like a handshake, a special secret handshake. When people would approach each other in the 70s, they'd say, man, you're an old soul. Like, well, who knows what that meant? Who isn't an old soul? You know, old King Cole was a merry old soul, a merry old soul was he. But the fact of the matter is, we're all old souls. But you look at people today in the streets and you have to say, it looks like everyone's like in Rio de Janeiro and Mardi Gras. Wherever I go, carefree, nothing bothers them, sitting in the cafes, eating and drinking, whatever. And you can't get mad at them. What should they be doing? Well, what they should be doing is standing up to the communists in the White House and the progressive communists who are stealing their freedom. That's what they should be doing with a bat and a striped suit in the year 2011. The world is burning around them, and they're still talking about an 1890s game. You hear? Baseball. They're still hero-worshipping a goon with a big prize. And you look at the country and you say, well, every time, the only way I can deal with is when I look at these people or I hear them, if I overhear them, I say to myself, that's why we can have this guy in the White House. Then I walk on. It now allows me to live with my world. I look at them and I say, that's how we can have such a fraud in the White House. Take a look at them, listen to them, and you'll understand how we can have a fraud in the White House. That's all you got to know is look at them. Okay, I used to have another pat phrase when I'd listen to them. I'd say, there's no answer for that mentality or that attitude other than liberalism is a mental disorder. You see? But now I look at them. I say, this is how we can have a fraud in the White House. But if you think this was an accident where we have a body politic that is so stupid, so numb, so drugged up, whether it's Prozac-like compounds or six other drugs put out by the government medical complex, that's how you have such a thin man in the White House.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. We're all praying for regime change here in the United States of America. What we need is regime change, but we don't have NATO to call upon. We only have the good citizens of the United States of America to make certain that you throw out every socialist Democrat in the House and in the Senate. And, of course, that Obama goes back to being a community organizer. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. The website is michaelsavage.com. And so what would you like to talk about? Well, we're talking about, of course, the mendacity of Barack Obama. We're talking about how to know who your enemy is. We're talking about how to not give an inch to your enemy. Don't compromise with the progressives or the radical left because they want to turn you into a serf. And we're also talking about a movie that opened today called Atlas Shrugged, based upon Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. And that led us to talking about pirate capitalists who use the free market not to advance society, but simply to advance their own purse and to screw everybody around them. And we've given you certain examples. And in my opinion, General Electric is the biggest abuser in America. And you don't have to be a genius to understand, nor a leftist or a rightist to understand that I'm right. How do you understand this in any way I can tell you? Why? Because they own MSNBC, you like them? That makes you a progressive. It makes you a moron. It means you're just one of the serfs that bought into their lies. So the guy owns NBC and MSNBC. He owns General Electric, and he owns the presidency. And he pays no taxes for the corporation General Electric here in America, according to what I read. This, to me, is criminal. But how do you have a hearing on this if they own the government? the same way as why no Wall Street bankers have been jailed to this day. In my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I pointed out chapter and verse who I believe was responsible for the meltdown of our economy. It didn't just happen. They orchestrated it. And yet the people who pulled it off, not one of them has been indicted. The small fry got indicted. Where, for example, is the former head of the SEC? Where is he gone? What is he doing today? The man's job was to not permit this to happen. He was never, ever indicted. Where is the former Treasury Secretary? How come he was never called on the carpet? Because when you reach a certain level and you own the government, this is how you make certain that you have protexia, as they used to call it in the ex-Soviet Union. And if you think we're much different than the ex-Soviet Union, it's because you're an idiot and you don't have any idea of history. And then we brought a case in point of Arianna Huffington, one of the most clever abusers of people I've ever seen, in my opinion. First, she was a conservative Republican, married a very rich man with an oil fortune, who ran for the Republican governorship, lost. She divorced him, took a fortune, recreated herself as a lib, and then she created a website, and she used bloggers to build the website. And none of them were rewarded, so far as I know, to any great extent, when she sold her website for over $300 million. And they're pissed off. Some of them are saying when she merged with AOL and took $300 million a payday, the bloggers or contributors are saying that she made a case of enrichment at their expense. Okay? They said that had they known she was going to sell for hundreds of millions of dollars, many would have demanded compensation along the way. Others say that Arianna Huffington presents the case that content on the internet should be free. Yet she does not give away free advertising. Either on HuffPo or AOL, she charges advertisers millions of dollars. So why shouldn't bloggers have been paid? Now, I for one hope that this battle against Huffington and AOL goes on for several years, because every dollar spent on lawyers is one less for Obama and the progressives. That's number one. But I think that any poor blogger who thought that they were getting something honest in Huffington Post never really understood that they were an actor in Animal Farm. And a quote from Animal Farm must be read right now, Orwell's great book. Somehow, I'm quoting now, somehow it seemed as though the farm had grown richer without making the animals themselves any richer, except, of course, for the pigs and the dogs, close quote. And then, of course, there's another quote from Animal Farm, which you may have read in high school. Quote, the creatures outside looked from pig to man, and from man to pig, and from pig to man again, but already it was impossible to say which was which, close quote. So if you're a blogger or was a blogger or are a blogger for, I guess, any site, and you're not being paid, I don't care whether you're a progressive or a flaming right-winger, do you think you should be paid? Let's start in New York City on WOR. Arlene says she was a contributor to the HuffPo. Arlene, welcome to the program.
Greetings. I have had a weekly column in the New York Post. I was invited to do a blog for Huffington. My first question was, how much do you pay? And they laughed and said, we don't pay. I said, well, I am not a novice. I am a professional, and I don't write.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a little off-put by that.
So did you write for them anyway?
Of course not. No.
I see.
No.
I see, but they tried to snooker you with you'll get exposure, right?
But you see, the kids want it. The kids think that blogging gives you credibility. Michael, if you're going to put down $150 to go to the theater, do you want a non-entity to review it, or do you want someone who has credentials, has gone to university, understands the components of a good theatrical production, and you can respect them?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm hearing from you. I feel as though I'm listening to a violinist as you speak, because you're playing with many strings now. You're not playing a banjo.
You see, when I listen to you, Michael, I stand here with a smile on my face because we are kindred spirits. My column was about professionalism because there's so little of it anymore. And the people at the top are far removed from the lower echelons who are trying to hang on to their jobs to pay the mortgage and the kids in school. They don't want to create waves.
No, of course, they're trapped. It's the same in the military. Have you noticed how many military generals, after they retire, they tell us how awful the Army was and they wouldn't have done it? How come they don't open their mouth while they're in the military? Because they get demoted.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
Going forward, I called Macy's. They transferred me to a call center in India.
Oh, sure.
And now, it should be, in my humble opinion, required that we keep the jobs.
I know. I've had that happen. In fact, I've sometimes asked Dorothy where she's from, and she's told me she's in India. They actually will tell you that they're from India. And you wonder why there's no jobs. Why do we permit that? How do we permit this to happen?
You, sir, that's
Arlene, let me ask you something else. You said you wrote a column for the Post for years, or you said that? Did I catch that right?
No, I'd like to send it to you. I'd like to send you a funny one.
No, I'm saying, did you write for the New York Post is what I'm asking?
Yes.
And what was the gist of it? What kind of articles?
Professionalism.
You wrote a single column, or you wrote a continuous column?
Weekly.
And what? So you had a weekly column.
Yes.
And then what? You were too good for Murdoch?
We parted. And
yeah.
What my mantra is today, I have a nonprofit. I work with inner city kids, and I tell them, if you forget everything you've learned in high school, learn one word, and you will always, always land on your feet. Appropriate. The way you dress and behave on a basketball court or in a sports bar, you do not take to church or a job interview.
Hmm.
No booty, no boobies.
Yeah, and no pants underneath your behind.
That's the column I want to send you.
All right, stay on the line, Arlene. I'm going to send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. You send me the article. Beowulf, please exchange emails. So that was very interesting. We got other callers now calling in on the type of traitors in the corporate world, and you understand now what I'm trying to get at. It's been a long, hard road for me to try to explain this without being seen as a bitter guy. Every time I've criticized Rush Limbaugh as being simply a proponent of piracy, pirate capitalism, or free market, it's the same thing. There is no such thing as unfettered free capitalism, free market rather. There's no such thing. Either it's a monopoly or it's not a monopoly. And you have to look at General Electric. To me, it's a monopoly. And for you, I've been talking for you months now about Google, right? That it's a monopoly. I'm not the only one. They're being sued right now for monopolistic practices. Now, my guess is that it's going to go nowhere because they are so inbred with the Obama administration that it's very unlikely that Eric Holder, who is perhaps the worst attorney general in American history, the least reliable, the least professional, the most embarrassing attorney general in history. It's highly unlikely he'll go after the Google organization and break them up the way Standard Oil was broken up by more honorable governments in the past. You understand? Texas, Kathy, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I disagree. I even say there's even one even worse than GE is the software industry.
Wait, hold on. Stop. I didn't hear you. Which industries?
The software, hardware industry, Microsoft, Oracle, I think even far exceed GE.
You think Microsoft is a monopoly?
Oracle, Microsoft. Look at as an employee of one of them. You know, you look at Larry Ellison. He has a $100 million home. He gets a break because nobody can afford to buy his home. They are the source of outsourcing.
Wait, hold on. So you're saying too many things at once. Just because he has a $100 million home doesn't mean he's evil.
He gets a huge, enormous tax break because no one can afford to buy his home. Why is that?
Well, what do you mean he gets a tax break? What type of tax break?
He got millions and millions and millions of dollars tax break because he went to the government. Look at it like 2 years ago. He can't sell his home because it's worth $100 million. Nobody can afford to buy it. So the government gave him an enormous millions and millions of dollars of tax break.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know of any such deal. I'm not following you. The government can't give him a tax break on a home that he didn't sell. It doesn't make any sense, Kathy. Look, to just be angry at the rich is not the purpose of my discussion today. There are very rich people who pay very high taxes. And then there are very rich people who pay no taxes. Mainly corporate taxes is what we're talking about. Very few very rich people pay no taxes. It's some major corporations that pay no taxes, such as General Electric. You understand, Kathy?
I understand.
Okay. I'm getting... 1-800-449-8255. Gas, $2.80 a gallon of gas. And okay, what are they marching about now? Now, this is worrying me very much. Here's an article. TSA singles out people who complain about the TSA. Doesn't that frighten you that an agency run by a shady character is now looking at people who complain about TSA security? That anyone who complains about their totalitarian bent is now investigated? Complaining about airport security is an indicator that they might use to pull you aside when they look for criminals. Unless, of course, you do it while wearing a burqa. If you want to complain about Big Sis and her totalitarian ways, I suggest that you wear a burqa where only your eyes are showing through a slit. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oh, man, a man. I'm joking with the guys during the break, just lightening things up, you know, because it's already Friday. A lot of people are somewhere else, you know, 7:25 p.m. here in the East Coast and 4:25 on the West Coast. People don't want to hear about how bad it all is in Obama. They know he's what he is. They know what he is, the thin man, you know what I mean? And we're not referring to his weight. And we know he's a puppet, okay, a figurehead. Let's put it to you that way. He's not the first figurehead president. But he's the most mendacious of the most current crop of figureheads. Let's put it to you that way. And also, he is the least patriotic, in my estimation. I trust him least with regard to his basic love for America. I don't think there is any. In fact, I know there isn't any. How do you know, really? You can't know for sure. But my suspicion is by his actions and his policies, he's a classic progressive. His sympathies are with a government, a world government run by a group of elitists. Outside the United States, and he won't be happy until the dollar is broken, the yuan replaces the dollar, and basically we're under the control of the United Nations and the International Criminal Court. That's what I see in this man. He is the most dangerous. I got to stop. He said, I didn't even want to go there. So I was joking because I said to the guys, my producer and my call screener, very nice younger men, I don't even talk to them. I'm here and they're in Oregon. We talk on the microphone. You talk about a digital life or whatever it is. I mean, we saw each other like twice in our lives. I never even met Charles, right? I know Beowulf from a couple of parties. He's worked with me for how many years now, Beowulf?
Oh, God, 8 years now.
8 years, and we've seen each other twice. It's a good marriage, okay? So I was saying to them, because I'm a lot older than them, I don't know what how it came up. I said, you know, I'm reminded of John Steinbeck's advice to his son when his son was going to get married. And Steinbeck, the great American writer, says his son asked him for some advice about the wife or marriage. And Steinbeck said to his son, according to what I read, he said, son, let me tell you something. Be very careful before you get married, because whatever it is that's a very small problem right now in how you perceive your wife is going to become a very, very big problem in a short period of time. I mean, it was a very funny statement, but it's true in reverse. The same for the women looking at the men. Whatever small flaws you see in the guy, okay, or whatever quirks they are that you're overlooking, they won't be so small in a short period of time. They're going to become like a resounding nightmare. Then I got an email from my good friend Peter Chalka. He said, minor point, but Arianna Huffington's husband, Michael, ran and lost for the U.S. Senate in 1994, not for the governor. He said, excellent point in the last hour about what you see in people, detached, distracted by debauchery, dumb, when you walk the streets. That's the most frightening thing. Obama is a perfect metaphor for this new America. He's our destiny. I actually ate dinner in Arianna Huffington's house during that period. She's a very nice woman, and I'm sure she's still a very nice woman. And just because she made $300 million doesn't make her an evil woman. It just makes her very smart and very canny. And how she used the bloggers, hey. Salutations.
Savage.
So let's not just sit here and say everyone who's very, very wealthy is evil and everyone who is, you know, stealing. That's crazy. My hat's off to those who make it honestly. But the fact is, there are too many large corporations, transnationals, who do business overseas and avoid U.S. taxes. That's one juggling act. But to then find out that GE earned $4 billion domestically and paid no taxes, to me, indicates that there's some fraud going on somewhere. That's how I would do it. If I ran the government, I would immediately have an investigation of how. You see, now GE hires former IRS agents, allegedly hundreds of them are working for them. They even write laws for themselves to enable them to write laws that they get away with paying no taxes. That's not right. Period. End of story. That's how I see it. Steve in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Big fan. Love your book. I just want to point out a few things, though. The shareholders of GE, we do pay taxes on the profits.
I understand, but why should the corporation get off scot-free?
It's double taxation. It's already, it's, you know, think of it as a lemonade.
Oh, come on. You're pulling my leg. How could you say taxing a corporation for profits earned in the U.S. and then individuals who make money on stock sale, on what are you making it on? You're paying taxes on what part of the GE money?
GE is a lemonade stand, and it sells a lemonade, you know.
So you're stop it. My dogs are fighting under the desk. They're like two corporate titans. Let me ask you something. Are you suggesting that a corporation should pay no taxes in the United States of America?
To an extent. Hong Kong, certain countries don't have corporate taxations. We already have the highest level of corporate tax anywhere.
So in other words, GE is doing the right thing by paying no taxes.
No, it's not. First of all, GE employees pay payroll tax. GE shareholders.
We're not talking about employees. We're talking about the corporation. I didn't say they should give up all of the $4 billion in profit. But if Obama, a good friend of Jeffrey Immelt, is arguing we should all pay our fair share, how does he not see the disconnect between that statement and GE paying nothing?
GE is not sending their kids to public school. GE is not a physical person. You know, GE.
So you're arguing then that corporations should earn their money and pay no taxes at all?
If it's taxed on a shareholder level, corporations really shouldn't pay taxes.
Pay taxes.
Huh?
They shouldn't.
They should not, right.
You really believe that?
There's plenty of small businesses. S-corporations in the U.S. don't pay corporate taxes.
That's not true at all. S-corporations pay almost the same thing as individual income tax. That's nonsense. S corporations are paying almost the same amount as individuals. That's wrong. You're wrong about that.
Not through entity. No, I'm not.
Well, I know an awful lot about that, Steve. S corporations do not evade taxes at all. They're paying full bore taxation.
Taxes. I'm saying on the individuals, members of the S corporation, they pay the taxes because otherwise it's double taxation. It's, you know, that $100 that I sell when I sell a car.
But you can't argue that a corporation as large as General Electric, which benefits from all of the protections of the United States government, all of the infrastructure that permits it to do its business in the U.S., should be able to pay no taxes. I don't believe that you really mean that.
No, the shareholder pays the taxes on those profits. Like if GE makes $100 in Japan selling nuclear energy, when that money comes to the shareholder, you know, be it a mutual fund or a pension fund.
Can you name any other country in the world that permits any corporation to pay no income tax? I'm not aware of any.
Hong Kong.
Okay, so you'd like to have the Hong Kong style government here in America?
No. It's even in the U.S. The corporate income tax was always very low, and it's gone up, and higher and higher and higher. But people forget.
Well, let's talk about Hong Kong for a minute. First of all, Hong Kong is part of China. Is that correct?
I guess, yeah.
Yes, it's now part of it. It was turned over to China quite a while ago. Hong Kong is not besieged by illegal aliens who get free education, free medication, is it?
I don't know.
No, the Chinese know how to deal with illegal immigrants. It's a little different than the progressive view of illegal immigration here in America. So Hong Kong, if you want to use that as an example, which is not a fair example, certainly not a comparable example, but Hong Kong is not burdened by the same problems that we have here in America, nor are they stressed by the same expenses. But thank you for the call. I don't agree with you at all. Not at all. I don't believe GE should get away with paying no taxes. Incidentally, for the Christians amongst us, this Sunday is Palm Sunday. It's a beautiful holiday. It's a very important holiday to Christians around the world. And it always falls on the Sunday before Easter Sunday. And what the feast commemorates is Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. You can look it up yourself to see what it is. And Palm Sunday is marked, for those of you who know, whether you're Christian or not, it's a very, very, very interesting day, by the distribution of palm leaves, often tied into crosses, to the worshipers. Now, there were times when the palm leaves were not available, and so people in other countries didn't always use palm leaves. Sometimes in unfavorable climates where there were no palms, they used boughs of yew, willow, or other native trees. And the Sunday was often designated by the names of these trees, such as Yew Sunday, or by the general term Branch Sunday. I know when I was a kid in Queens, I lived next to a big church, a Catholic church. And we just certainly didn't attend it, but I used to watch the parishioners on Palm Sunday. I loved the holiday because I used to love seeing them leave the church with palm leaves in their hands. There was something that demarked to me the beginning of spring. I can't explain it. It marked a certain time period. It's always interesting to me how Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday fall around the same time as the Jewish Passover, and how the Jewish and the Christian holidays, in the most traditional sense, are so interrelated. It's an amazingly beautiful synchrony, to see the unity between Jews and Christians at this phase of human development and human history. There's only one religion on earth that has not gone through a Middle Ages. There's only one religion on earth that has not gone through a Reformation. There's only one religion on earth that still adheres to the tenets of the early days of the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th centuries. Only one religion on earth, and it's not Christianity. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What would you like to talk about? New York, Zach, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I would like to offer you my indentured servitude.
You're pulling my leg. You must be a progressive blogger, huh?
I'm 23. I'll give you 7 years. When I'm 30, I'll start a family.
Hey, don't laugh. I might take you up on it. But I would never take you as a servant. I would have to pay you. I don't believe in abusing or exploiting any worker ever. Ever. Everybody needs to be paid fairly. What do you think you could learn by working for me for 5 years?
Analytical skills.
I'm sorry, Zach, I missed it. Zach, what skills?
Analytical skills.
Analytical skills. Oh, very interesting. I would have thought you would have said how to be a writer or a famous broadcaster. You want to learn how to think.
I can think, but there's something you have that is, it's a power, it's a passion, and I love it, and it gives me...
That's beautiful, Zach. Do you have? I'm not asking a silly question. We're on the radio now, but I'll do this openly on an open mic. Do you have a family in New York?
Yeah, I have family in New York and Israel.
But you don't want to just leave a family and move to the West Coast, do you?
Mike, I see no hope in the country, and I want to give back, and I feel like after you retire, who is there? You know, that guy who fills in. I want to learn from you. I want to be the next Michael Savage.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that's interesting. So you want to go under my wing, and you want my tutelage, and you hope the main thing you'll learn is how to think analytically. Now, let me talk about that for a minute. It's a very interesting question. No one's actually ever raised it. How do you come to that ability? The hard ability to analyze things and come up with the right conclusion. First of all, you need good tutelage. My father was uneducated. He never went past, I think, the 9th grade. I don't really know. But he had a very strong will and a very smart mind. He was an immigrant who came here with nothing. And he didn't wind up a very wealthy man. In fact, he was lower middle class, bought a house, paid for it, and never owed anybody a dime. To me, that means he died a very rich man. You know, as it is said in the writings of the elders, who is a rich man? He who was satisfied with his lot. So I would say that in certain ways, that regard, he was a rich man. But let's put that aside. He taught me how to think. He would yell at me if I didn't think correctly. He would not let me off the hook in any of his discussions with me. He would force me to answer my own questions, mainly Zach. If I'd say, "Dad, why does the moon block the sun occasionally?" He would say, "Think about it." He would never answer the question. Now, unless you have certain facts to work with, you can't think about it, right?
Of course.
So you need. So then you need to rudimentally understand how the sun is fixed in heaven, how the moon moves around the earth, and how the earth moves around the sun, right?
Of course.
And once you go to the Hayden Planetarium, as we did in New York when I was a kid, and you see all of that wonderful movement, you can then come back and say, "Dad, I found that how come the moon blocks the sun in a lunar eclipse." You know what I mean?
100%.
It's the same thing with politics. It's not much different. Once you understand what the parameters are of what we are facing, that this is a nation that was built on individualism, not on statism, not on the centralization of power, but on the strength of the individual, you realize we've come to the end of the cycle and that we're actually very lucky to have had a communist elected president in the United States at this time. I actually was thinking about saying that all day today, but I'm going to say it today in honor of Palm Sunday. We're very lucky that Barack Obama was made president because America can finally see the devastation that a communist brings to office. And we've only seen not even the half of what this man is going to do to us unless the Republicans get their act together. Zach, what is it you think you could do for me?
Besides cleaning your floors and...
No. Hey, no, Zach. I'm not using you as a housekeeper. I have a housekeeper. I don't need a housekeeper. What is it you really think you could do for me?
What I could do for you is learn from you and spread your teachings, because...
Well, you said learn from me. That's not doing anything for me. You could listen to my show and learn from me.
Michael, you need your legacy to be spread. You're 70, and I'm 23.
I'm not 70. Don't add years to my age. I'm still... I have not yet had my 3 score and 10. No, sir.
I'm just afraid that after you, who is there? I don't see anyone. And...
I'll answer the question very simply. Après moi, le déluge. You know what that means?
No.
See, I had a classical education, even though I was a proletariat from a poor family. I had a first-class education that exceeds that of graduate school at Harvard today. Just my 4 years at Queens College was better than 8 years at Harvard, I can guarantee you. Anyone who has a PhD from Harvard in political science didn't get as much as I did from 4 years as an undergraduate at Queens College. I had to learn French. I had to learn two languages to get a bachelor's degree. Would you believe it? Anyway, so I read all of the French greats in college. I can't speak French very well, but I remember I used to love the epigrams of some of the great French writers and philosophers of the 17th and 18th centuries. And, of course, who wrote Après moi le déluge, after me the deluge? Who wrote that? Does anyone know the answer to that? You'll win a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Zach, for your sake, do you have a job right now?
What?
Do you have a job right now?
Yes, I do. I export used items to Africa.
So you have a job?
Yeah, I do really well, and I also have a family real estate business. But
so what the heck do you want to go waste your time sitting and listening to me for? Why don't you just listen to the show, read my books, and get a discussion group going with some friends in New York? Is it hard to find people to talk to?
It's impossible.
Impossible. That's the truth. Well, now I know you'd be a good disciple. Now, that's the best answer I've heard thus far. So you have no friends. That's the first requirement to work for me, is that you have to have no friends. It means that there's a chance that we could have a meaningful conversation. Maybe you'll be the first member of my cult, Zach. Do you want to do that?
Yes, I will.
And you could distribute the Kool-Aid downstream. We could buy an island, and you could be my chief Kool-Aid dispenser.
I can buy the sneakers too.
Wait, what's the sneaker analogy? I missed that one. What's that?
When all those, like, Jim Jones cults, whenever, you know.
Oh, they had sneakers. What was that one in San Diego, Beowulf, where the Hale-Butt people, what were they wearing when they went to heaven?
I'm guessing Nikes. I don't know.
Nikes, probably made by slave labor. Zach, tell you what we're going to do, Zach. I'm not going to hire you quite yet, but Beowulf, get Zach's email and we'll get into a conversation. I'll be right back. Yeah, we were joking in the last segment about the Hale-Bopp people, and someone just sent this to me. They did wear Nike sneakers. Marshall Applewhite was the guru. You know, I understand that a certain blackboard using individual from Fox News who will soon be gone from Fox News owing to the blackboards and the empty glasses and the people who are finally on to the con has moved into the religious realm. It's a very interesting devolution to go from the news, the commentary business, to religion, to the revival meeting. But I've thought about it myself jokingly, but I actually am thinking about doing it. I've toyed with it for years on the show. In fact, I once approached my syndicator saying I'd like to do a Saturday or Sunday morning religious show and my regular show. Ask him. I did for years, I would say. It would be like, you know, the Temple of All Faiths, and I would do Bible readings and explain it. Just an hour a week, like no ads kind of thing. But then I never did it because I'm telling you something right now. You got to hear me. I've been around long enough on the earth to tell you the straight up MS on this. I've known for at least 30 to 40 years that I have the power to have been one of these new age gurus. I had it all along every step of the way. I was born with a charismatic gift of speech. I was always able to move crowds. I did so many, many times in my life, and I stopped doing public appearances approximately 5 or 6 years ago. I don't remember exactly when. I can move crowds. I enjoy moving crowds. I enjoy being with crowds. I move by crowds. But I decided that this is a very, very interesting gift that I've been given, and it has to be very carefully watched, because if the gift is misinterpreted, you slip into demagoguery, and at that point, almost anything is possible. And so then you look at a guy like Jim Jones, and then you look at a guy like Marshall Applewhite, who was convinced that a spaceship was trailing the Hale-Bopp comet, and he convinced his 38 followers to commit suicide so that their souls could board the ship. And he said that mass suicide was the only way to evacuate this Earth, and he gives them phenobarbital, cyanide, and arsenic mixed with applesauce and pudding washed down with vodka, all clutching to the belief that a UFO would take their souls to another level of existence above human. And then the members place plastic bags over their heads just in case the drugs didn't do the trick. See the power of demagoguery? But you see it on the political level. We haven't had too many demagogues in American political history who were able to really, let's say, convince people that they were messianic. Obama had that messianic power over millions of people, tens of millions of people in the beginning. They were conned by him. He's lost the messianic power amongst all but the most idiotic in America. Oh, there are those who will still vote for him, still believe in him, because their politics are tied to his. But they no longer believe he's some divine creature sent down to save America. They know that that's utter nonsense. They know that there's you know, power behind him. So that explains to you why I never went into the guru business. I've toyed with it many times. I've had a fight with myself, actually, about buying an island and leaving this. I mean, you're telling me, many of you listening to this show, you wouldn't give up everything to move to an island with me as the guru. You would. I know you would. But what am I going to do there, buy 10 Rolls Royces and get orange robes? I don't even like a Rolls Royce here in the 48 states. What am I going to do with 10 Rolls Royces on an island?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
quarrel. It almost breaks my heart, 'cause I'm so afraid that we will have to part. Each night I ask the stars up above, why must I be a teenager in love?
Well, here's some of the topics we're going to talk about today in the Savage Nation, and that would be Obama, of course, Obama and Obama. Obama took in $2 million yesterday in a series of fundraisers in Chicago. Now, he's going to spend $1 billion on his election campaign. You actually believe that that $1 billion couldn't be used to help the poor and the women and the handicapped, et cetera, and so on? Of course you do. That's why his poll numbers are as low as they've ever been. Why do you think Obama is loved by the mega-rich, elitist Marxists and disliked by most everyone else, left, right, and center? Now that Trump is leading all other Republicans in the polls, do you think he can actually beat Obama? And are you more or less suspicious of Obama's birth origins than you were a year ago? Or have you kind of brushed it off? Also, Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Shrugged. The movie Atlas Shrugged was based on the book by Ayn Rand, coming out in theaters today. Ayn Rand is often used by Republicans to promote unfettered capitalism. But the real Ayn Rand didn't think that capitalism should be without limits. What does Ayn Rand mean to you? What limits should government be allowed to place on the free market? Where do you see Republicans going too far in their push for big business? And finally, Nancy Pelosi, do women think? In a recent speech on the floor of the House, I should say in the gutter of the House, Nancy Pelosi accused Republicans of assaulting the judgment of women. And she said she once engaged in a high school debate where the topic was, do women think? Well, in her case, we're not sure. But are Republicans assaulting the judgment of women or the lack of judgment by Nancy Pelosi? Today, I've discussed several articles. The Mendacity of Barack Obama by Steve McCann. Summary. He says, while I've always been wary of and have written about his dishonesty, after the speech the president delivered the other day regarding the federal budget, one that was chock full of lies, deceit, and crass fear-mongering, it must be said that Barack Obama is the most dishonest, deceitful, and mendacious person in a position of power I have ever witnessed. And then he defined the sociopath. We also talked about a class action lawsuit against Arianna Huffington. Should bloggers get paid? Then we talked about who our enemies are and how we should not underestimate them. And then remembering the real Ayn Rand, the author of Atlas Shrugged. She was an individualist, not a conservative, and she knew big business was as much a threat to capitalism as government bureaucrats. Are you paying attention, ditto heads? Now, let's look at the menu for Obama's Chicago fundraising event yesterday and rate it on the health scale. Lobster, okay. Griddled Maine lobster sandwiches, okay. Perch, I wouldn't eat it with a 10-foot pole, comes from polluted waters. Salmon, okay. Asparagus, good. And then we get down to the real McCoy. Short ribs. Seared Maine diver sea scallops. Rosemary braised short ribs. I'm not so sure short ribs are as healthy as carrots, Beowulf, are you?
I don't know about that yet, yeah.
I would say, therefore, let them eat short ribs. Sound-wise, you have to hear the trailer for the movie Atlas Shrugged. It's pretty good, and we're going to talk about it again. President Obama is caught on an open mic by CBS News saying the budget debate was all about Republicans sneaking their agenda into their negotiations. Oh, God. Robert Reich, he goes on the GE channel and says it's time to get rid of deductions for the rich. Screw you, Reich. Go back where you came from. Representative Nancy Pelosi says Republicans don't believe that women think. No, it's only in your case. Nancy Pelosi said elections shouldn't matter as much as they do. Thank you, Mussolini's daughter. Hillary Clinton at the U.S. Islamic World Forum says Islam has always been a part of American history. We can't find any references that prove that. Michael Savage says Obama peed on the backs of productive Americans and tried to call it rain. And now let's see what made it to michaelsavage.com, where all the news that I can't get to, some of it, you know, I do get to, some of it I don't get to on the radio show. It's all for your disgust. It's all for your horror show. Top left at MichaelSavage.com, Obama's favorite gangsters convicted again by Matthew Vadum of the Washington Times. He's talking about ACORN, the radical left-wing activist voter fraud group. Obama, you can't pee on our backs and call it rain, by yours truly. Poll says Trump takes lead in GOP field. Don't miss the mendacity of Barack Obama. Well, actually, I wish we could miss it, but it's a good article. On the bottom of MichaelSavage.com, you must read this article, Opponents or Enemies, by John Walker. And he starts by saying, in any conflict, it is a deadly error to mistake or underestimate the adversary's capabilities. Okay? Around the globe, what was once confidently deemed Western civilization is in an end-stage battle with champions of a collectivist and statist ideology, which over the last century has enacted programs of redistributive taxation, borrowing and spending, whose unsustainability has now become self-evident, and which, unless the present course is altered, will collapse in at most 10 years. Further, the second and higher order effects of these policies have led to demographic collapse in the societies which have adopted them. And he said, the crippling of capital formation has been used as a justification for mass immigration from regions hostile to the culture and values of the West, which have been responsible for its prosperity. You got to read this article. It's about the destructive progressives or liberals who are not advocates of progress or liberty. They are the enemies of them. It's a fabulous article. I linked it up. It's from John Walker, and it's on MichaelSavage.com. It's an amazing article that you can't miss. In fact, I recommend it's exclusive to the Savage Nation, by the way. Came to us from somewhere on Earth. Three largest online poker sites shut down by the FBI. Obama back to a Gallup low. He's galloping to a low. Obama says Republicans will make the USA a third world nation. You talk about triangulating the opposition. He's making it a third world nation. I wish he would just resign. Anyway, his job approval's at 41%, tying his low. Approval amongst independents is down to 35%. I don't believe it. It's probably zero. So this is the Gallup poll. I'd like to see another one, you know. All Americans, 41%. Democrats, he's got an approval of 77% amongst the morons. 35% amongst independents and 14% amongst Republicans. They conclude, President Obama is now as unpopular as he has been at any time since he became president. He faces difficult challenges ahead. Oh, please, he created these challenges. They say Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton all were similarly unpopular at this stage of their presidencies, but the last two were able to turn things around in time to win a second term in office. Oh, please don't put them in the same category. By comparison, Bill Clinton was an Eagle Scout compared to this character. God.
That's saying something.
Unbelievable. Imagine we're looking forward to Bill Clinton by comparison.
Amazing.
Italian activists murdered by Muslims. Oh, I'm sorry, Islamists. Pardon me. Turkey in talks to open Taliban office in Istanbul. Oh, my God. To legitimize and legalize a terrorist group. It's awful.
They got an office?
Yeah, office. I guess they give out serrated knives for cutting off heads of infidels.
At least it's in Istanbul. It's convenient to the rest of the Middle East.
There you go. Jodie Foster stands behind Mel Gibson. Well, we'll let that one go. Protest crackdown in Syria. They're shooting and killing him there, and the AP calls it a protest and a crackdown. You hear this?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, all this and more can be found on the Savage Nation and on MichaelSavage.com. ACLU Sioux School Over Prayer Banner. The banner, a gift of the school's first graduating class, has been displayed since 1963 in the Cranston West Auditorium. But the vermin, communist, degenerate scum from the end of the sewer pipes of Hollywood in the ACLU, who should all be deported as far as I'm concerned. If I had the power, I would use every aspect of the government that I had at my disposal. I would use the FBI. I would use the Justice Department. I would investigate every dollar that's ever come into the ACLU. I'd investigate their fake nonprofit status. And when they were found guilty, as they are guilty, I would take all their money, I'd seize all their assets, and I'd deport all the members of the ACLU, all the leadership, every last one of them. I'd throw them out of the country. These are the subversives of subversives. These are the people who've gone after the Bible, gone after the Ten Commandments, gone after the military, gone after mother and father, gone after the Holy Ghost itself. These are the worst people on the planet. These are the Taliban of America, the ACLU. And many of you psychotics give them money. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. I don't know. Let's try something else.
I ran all the way.
Impalas, I ran all the way home. Now, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, we're going to shift to another song. We're going to do Come Softly to Me by the Fleetwoods next on the new rock and roll on the Savage Nation. We're going to break that record because it's a little too soft for the Savage Nation. Let us go to something real fruity, a white sport coat and a pink carnation by Marty Robbins. That's the next one we're going to do here. I always play this in the spring. Like in May. It's not May yet. Turn it off already. It's too early for it. I remember when that song came out. I wish to God I had a white sport coat. Instead, I had dead man's pants. No, I remember when that song came out, a white sport coat, I was so envious of normal American boys who had white sport coats and ties and went to, like, cotillions. And I didn't understand any of it. I was working after school. Then I worked in the summer. I'm not complaining about it. It did me good. I mean, I'm still working, and I enjoy working because I don't know any better. There are normal people who don't work anymore when they don't have to. There's a whole philosophy on retirement that I've never discussed. I don't know whether to admire people who can retire successfully or not admire them. I know I could never retire. On the other hand, I get up every day and say, why am I making enemies and knocking myself out every day on the Savage Nation when I don't have to do it anymore? And, of course, I answer it because I have to do it. I am required to do it by law. It's on my birth certificate. You shall work until the last days of your life. You shall work as hard as you have ever worked the older you get. You shall single-handedly try to save Western civilization. You shall work diligently against the enemy within, and you shall be rewarded in the next world for your travails, my son. I hear coming down from heaven. I don't hear anything from heaven. In fact, I knocked and no one was home, to be honest with you. That's sacrilegious, but I'm in good company when I get into that mood, because the truth is, who knows? Some days I range between absolute awe over God's control of everything, and then the next day I feel like, who is the sadist in the sky? I know that sounds sacrilegious to all of us who are religious in one regard, but, you know, you see a baby with cancer. You want me to go down the list, the litany? I get into this lamentation phase during this period of the year. Let's hear some more rock and roll.
All the leaves are brown. All the leaves are brown. And the sky is gray. And the sky is gray. I've been for a while. On a winter's day. On a winter's day. I've been safe and wild.
I go into lamentations. It's earlier this year because the allergies. It provokes lamentations. Like Job's tears. It's an amazing thing, but you look at the babies in the hospital. They didn't hurt anybody. What does the sadist in the sky want from them? And then you look at the evil people in this world. They're enjoying themselves, you say. You don't have to, how do you put two and two together? So you have to say, all right, then you go through the whole thing in the next world. Oh, come on, the next world. How about this world? We are living in a lockdown police state in this country. There's no freedom here. We have the illusion of freedom. Go walk through a mall and you'll see the freedom you have. There are 30 stores, all of them selling variations of the same garbage made in China. I walked through the mall this morning. I actually was stunned by it. I mean, I know about the lack of culture. I grew up with this whole thing. I walked from one store to the other. Urban Outfitters, Abercrombie & Fitch. I don't even remember the names. Every store sold the same garbage. Not one store had anything that I could possibly buy. I have no idea who buys the garbage. I don't know even women why they would go in there and buy the garbage. It's all the same junk. All of it's the same garbage made in China. All the same junk garbage clothing in a mall. So you say, well, okay, what does that have to do with what you're talking about? Well, that's an example of your freedom. The ad agencies have led you to believe that if you buy a blue shirt or a red shirt or a green shirt, that's your choice. That shows you how free you are. Or if you buy a car with a four-wheel drive or a two-wheel drive, a car that's a box or a car that's a saucer, that's an example of your freedom. Or if you dye your hair black or dye your hair pink, that's your freedom. Or if you put an earring on your nose or an earring on your ear, that's your freedom. Is that really your freedom? You feel like a free person in this country? You don't fear standing up to this dictatorship? You don't fear getting out and screaming at the top of your lungs, and you'd like to see the whole leadership driven out of the country for what they've done? Raped and pillaged this treasury! Raped and pillaged us! Robbing us blind, stealing our money, stealing our future, humiliating our children, debasing our schools, debasing our churches. There's nothing in this country that they do makes us feel good about it. Nothing. Everything they do makes us hate this country, makes us fear for this country, make us sad that we live in this country. They want you to hate the very soil you stand on. They want you to hate your land. They are the enemies of your land. They are the enemy within. I'm going to stop right here before I say something I regret.
Savage.
Jack Hunter is a columnist for the American Conservative. He joins us now in the Savage Nation to talk about this fake, supposedly big war on women that the left-wing demons in Congress say Republicans are waging, you know, right now. Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good to be with you as always, Michael. We all watched the budget battle showdown that went down here recently with the Republicans and Democrats up there on Capitol Hill debating how much they were going to cut out of our budget to do something about a $1.5 trillion deficit. Well, we all saw that, of course, the Democrats didn't do anything, and the Republicans did not much more than that. $38 billion in cuts is nothing. It amounts to nothing in the grand scheme of things of the debt and deficit crisis we face in this country. One interesting aspect, though, was, of course, the tone and the narrative the left took, which was totally predictable and something they do time and time again. When House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi told us that the Republicans were, quote, waging a war on women with their proposed cuts.
Isn't this just about getting our budget under control? And wouldn't that be better for women?
Well, what's interesting about this supposed war on women, and of course they said, of course, the Republicans are waging war on seniors and minorities and teachers and transsexuals. I don't know. You throw in your whatever the Democrats want to put in there. But what's really going on here is if we're going to seriously cut and do something about this budget, we're going to have to look at a little bit of everything. Paul Ryan has this plan, his Path to Prosperity, that addresses Medicare and addresses different aspects of things we need to cut in our government. And the liberals are up in arms about that, and we'll get to Ryan's plan a little bit more here in a second. But the overall point is, in going after Planned Parenthood, which would cut some government-funded women's health services, namely abortion and things like that, Nancy Pelosi is saying that that constitutes a war on women. Now, that is interesting because when some Republicans, like Tom Coburn or Senator Rand Paul, have suggested, that we need to cut out of the military budget, defense spending, that there's a lot of waste there, we hear from some Republicans, neoconservatives and hardline hawks, who say, well, those Republicans and Democrats who agree with them are waging a war on the military. The reason I bring that up is on the left or the right, whenever you go after things that we need to cut out of government in order to get back to fiscal sanity, both sides will claim that the other is going to war on some aspect of American life that they find, irresponsible.
This so-called budget battle wasn't a war on anything, was it? Didn't do anything at all to our debt, and all we ended up was with Kabuki Theater and a bunch of feel-good cuts to make Congress look good to their constituents. Nonsense.
What was really absurd about this whole recent political theater, that's what the budget battle was when you break it down, is that facing a $1.5 trillion deficit, the Democrats came up with $4 billion in cuts. That's laughable. We all know that's laughable. I even think the Democrats realize that's laughable. Of course, the Republicans took that measly number up to about $38 billion That was the final compromise. And people in the media and John Boehner himself was claiming that that was a Republican victory. Well, we learned after that compromise was agreed to that the debt jumped $54.1 billion in the week preceding the whole entire John Boehner-Barack Obama debate to cut $38 billion. So that $38 billion was negated just in the week before the budget battle, which means it's completely useless. It gives you an idea of what kind of problem we have up there in Washington, D.C. today with spending. I mean, we must note that we have a national debt that now stands at $14 trillion and counting. The idea that what the Democrats want to do, $4 billion would even touch that, $38 billion, which was the compromise, would even touch that, is completely ridiculous, and most Americans know that. The Tea Party is up in arms, and rightfully so. This is not a war on women. This is not a war on the military if we get two defense cuts, as Senator Rand Paul and some others have suggested. This is a war on the deficit in our national debt, and it is a war that most Americans are willing to wage, based not only by their widespread support for many of the Tea Party candidates during the midterm election. That's something that will be repeated in 2012, believe me. But in poll after poll across the ideological spectrum, we see Americans, many of them who even voted for Barack Obama, don't like what they're seeing now that he's in office, want something done about this debt and deficit spending. We can't keep doing this every year, and we can't do it forever.
Why in this debate, Jack, are we talking only about cutting billions of dollars when they only cut hundreds of millions, when we have to cut trillions? I mean, our debt is so out of control that the world's passing us by.
Well, that gets us into Paul Ryan's Path to Prosperity plan. Now, the liberals are freaking out, saying that, you know, this is an attack on Medicare, Nancy Pelosi, a war on women, a war on the elderly, so on and so on. Well, Paul Ryan's plan, if you're serious about cutting, as you noted, trillions of dollars, which is what this is going to take, would leave us, let's say, and this is over a 10-year plan that he promises would cut $6 trillion over a decade. If we're at $14 trillion now, in 10 years we'll be at $23.1 trillion. That will be the new national debt. That's not good enough, and that liberals are freaking out is indicative of how serious they are about cutting spending. A more serious plan has been proposed by Senator Rand Paul, who wants to cut $500 billion this year. Now, Senator Paul calls this a modest proposal in his op-ed column in the Wall Street Journal. He's absolutely right. Why is it modest? Because it only addresses one-third of the problem. Our annual deficit for this year projected is $1.5 trillion. Obviously, do the math, $500 billion only addresses a third of that. Well, Senator Paul's plan is even considered more crazy and radical than what Paul Ryan is proposing, which everybody's freaking out about as well. So what does that tell you? What it tells me is we have two political parties up there in Washington, D.C., the Democrats, of which none of them are substantively willing to address the deficit and debt, and we have the Republican Party, of which only a small minority are willing to even go there. And what is considered the most extreme plan, Senator Paul's, only addresses one-third of the problem. The only backup he's had on that, his co-sponsors are Senator Jim DeMint from South Carolina and Senator Mike Lee from Utah, and that is it. And it only addresses one-third of the problem. That gives you an idea of the sort of gravity of the situation on our hands.
Do you think Paul Ryan's plan will actually get us back on a path to prosperity? Or do you think our government is completely out of control at this point?
Well, Paul Ryan's plan, you know, claims that it's a job creator. It will get us back on a, you know, as you said, path to prosperity. But the big thing it's supposed to do is give us serious cuts. He promises over a 10-year a decade, that he's going to cut $6 trillion. And even if that's true, it's still a problem because you're going to have a $23 trillion national debt. What Paul Ryan's plan does is it cuts the increase in spending, which is not an actual cut. What Senator Paul is talking about is an actual cut, getting rid of $500 billion from this year's deficit. That's the difference. You know, some of us have this whole argument between Democrats and Republicans, where if Republicans go after Planned Parenthood or try to reform Medicare, they're having a war on women or seniors. And if some Republicans or some on the left try to cut the military, they say it's a war on the military. Some of us have this quaint notion that Congress should probably only do what's in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, what it gives them the authority to do. You know, if we would go back and just follow that again, in both parties, Republican and Democrat, a lot of the spending about what we should be doing with our federal government and all these different programs and projects would be a moot point. Now, if we could ever get back to that, you know, everybody says they're constitutionalists, a lot of this would just go away. The entire purpose of having a constitution, as the founders intended and said explicitly, of having a written charter is to limit the federal government. If it's not in Article 1, Section 8, you can't do it. The executive branch can only do limited things. If it's not in the Constitution, you can't do it. What we have now is an unlimited government. The reason we have a $14 trillion national debt in 10 years might have a $23 trillion national debt, and that number will certainly keep rising until everything just collapses, is our government does what it likes without any constitutional restraint whatsoever. If you remember when Nancy Pelosi was asked about Obamacare, what gives Congress the right to mandate health care in the Constitution, she said, "Are you serious?" Well, yeah, Americans are serious about all this government spending, including things like Obamacare, which we can't afford on top of the problems we already have. You're seeing it out there with the voters who they vote for, support for the Tea Party, and people upset with this $38 billion compromise. It's not good enough. And, you know, the fact that the Democrats, and Obama's giving his speech, he's going to cut this and that, no, they have no serious plans to do any such thing, and the few Republicans who are willing to do it aren't even getting enough support from their own party.
Well, what if America defaults on its debt? Will it do so?
There's a very good real chance we could end up like Greece and Iceland and Ireland, where we do default. And, you know, some of the point of Paul Ryan's plan or Senator Rand Paul's plan is to try to do something before we get to that point, but nobody's willing to get on board. It seems like things are going to have to get worse before they get better, and everybody in Washington, D.C. can sit up there with their head in the sand, and when we get to that point, things will change, not because everybody wants them to, but because they will have to. We'll be out of money and out of credit, and nobody will trust us anymore around the world. Our dollar will be worth nothing. But as always, Michael, I appreciate you letting me come on your program. If your listeners want to learn about this and more, I encourage them to visit SouthernAvenger.com.
Jack Hunter, thanks again for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Earth angel, earth angel, will you be mine, my darling dear, love you all the time.
So it's Obama in 2012, that's all. You may as well change the U.S. flag to the, I don't know, the U.N. flag. We'll probably be speaking Esperanto by 2015. I remember when I was a kid, I used to hear that there was going to be an international language named Esperanto. I didn't even know what it was, but it sounded so cool to me. Like, wow, man, I can give up English. I never liked English. You know what I mean? Let's move on to Esperanto. Maybe I'll do better in a world where I speak Esperanto. You know, that's the hope of the international communists, which is they think that they make you think when you're poor and you got nothing that somehow you're going to do better. You know, I got to tell you a funny story. I'll tell it to you anyway, even if it's not funny. It's funny to me because when I remember now, it just came back to me. I was in the living room. That was where everything happened in my childhood, the living room of my little house on Utopia Parkway. And in those days, there was a thing called a family. It consisted of a man and a woman, usually a grandmother and a grandfather. And there were actually family friends who stopped in the house. It was called America, circa 1950s. So in my living room, things happened. Everything happened. Relatives would stop by. They all lived in the same neighborhood. They'd walk over. After dinner, they'd have coffee. And I distinctly remember having an argument when I was, I don't know, 15, 16, when I started to think for myself or thought I could think for myself or just entered college and I had already all of the modernistic ideas. And I remember arguing with my uncle, who just deceased a few years ago, and I said to him, we were arguing over communism. I don't know how it came up. And he was anti-communist. I think I was entered Queens College, and I was being brainwashed already by the communist professors into socialism and communism. Most of them had fled Europe to come here to America and then put a knife in our back the minute they got here. After they were taken in, they put a knife in the back of the country. And they went to Queens College and City College, and they started to spread their dirty, filthy Marxism. And they started to brainwash me. So I remember arguing with my uncle. And I don't know how I was arguing. I don't know where I was coming from, but he said to me, "Don't you understand that with communism, they tell you that with a communist revolution, you on the bottom are going to wind up on top?" And he said with a smile, not even with anger, he said, "If you actually analyze it, the very same people who are on top in a capitalist society wind up on the top in a communist society." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Because they're tougher and they're smarter. That's why." He said, "So whatever the system is, they're going to wind up on the top, and you're going to wind up where you would have wound up anyway. So don't fall for it." I remember that to this day. I got it right away when he said it, and I didn't want to give him the point, but he made the point. I mean, it's turned out to be true, right? The same criminal gangsters are going to wind up on the top of any system. It doesn't matter what the economic system is, they're going to wind up on top. That's the way it works. And you could always blame somebody else for the fact that you had bad luck or something went wrong in your life. I rode the subway long enough to know what it's like to see the downside. I was down so long that nothing ever looks up to me. I was down so long that no matter what I've achieved, I still feel like I'm on the down. Don't you understand that? That's why I resonate with you. You see, you don't understand that part of it. I was beaten down so long and so hard by this society, and I came out of it through sheer willpower and sheer brains, not luck, willpower and brains, nothing else. There was no luck involved, no luck whatsoever. I wouldn't quit. I wouldn't stop. I kept doing it. I wouldn't take no for an answer. I went for 10 years feeling ashamed of myself that I failed my ancestors. I used to read stories about Chinese or Japanese kids who came here, went to school and got a B and shot themselves. And I said, I can understand it. They had such shame that they failed their families in the old country. I carried that burden with me for so long. And it was done to me by the very vermin who are running America today. The very liberals who stacked the deck against anybody with a brain who's honest did it to me. They said, white males need not apply. I don't want to cry. I've done well because I wouldn't let them defeat me. No matter what they threw at me, I kept fighting. I went around them. I went around them. I went around them. I went through them. I found a new field. I reinvented myself. I said, drop dead. I'll prove that I'm better than you. And in the end, I will win and I'll prevail. So here I am. But what I'm saying is the scars are permanent and I still have the mentality of the underdog. And I think it's because I still carry the mentality of the underdog and the way I project myself on the radio. I'm thinking out loud now. It's a funny show, really, in a way. It's a strange show. It's almost like therapy. It's almost like a confessional. See, when radio is good, it's a confessional where I'm the sinner and you're the priest. You ever think about it? The listener is the priest on the other side of the. They keep saying, you know, from the day I started radio, people say to me, man, there's something about this guy. He does free association like no one. And when he talks, I listen to him as though he's talking to me in my house. I can't stop listening to this guy, Savage, on the other side of the. So, but what I'm saying, if radio is really to be done right, you have to give it a lot and you have to take a lot of chances. You have to do the open heart, open mind thing or you're dead. You can only fake this for a day or two, maybe 5 seconds, by the way. If I gave you the microphone and you never did it, believe me, you wouldn't last 5 minutes. This is like getting into a ring with tigers. But what I'm saying is if you go into it honestly and you really project what you're thinking and you have the ability to do that, you'll survive. You'll do well enough. However, it is a confessional where I am the sinner. And I like that analogy for today, right? That's a good one, isn't it, Phil? That works. Phil is my sound engineer, I think. Is that your official title, Phil? Thank God I know what you do after 15 years. all right, so I'm the sinner, and you're the priest. All right, let's take some callers. Cut out the. Let's get down to work, Mike. I know. All right, get back to work, Mike. No reminiscing. Get back to the economy. Get back to Libya. Stick to the basics. It's a talk show, Mike. No variety. Don't vary. Don't go off topic. Now, Mike, stick to what you know best. That's it. Communism. That's all. Taxes. Republicans good. Democrats bad. Got stick to the basic theme that the other schmucks do. Don't get sidetracked, Mike. Let's go to Johnny in Biloxi, Mississippi. Johnny, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Savage, great to talk to you. Hey, instead of talking about all that crap, how about some stories about when you used to work with your dad?
All right, that's interesting. I'm a New York kid originally. You're from Biloxi, Mississippi. Totally different cultures. And yet here you resonate with the stories of my dad. Tell me which one comes to mind. Like if you were to say, pick one out of a hat that you remember.
I remember something about down in the basement.
You mean cleaning the bronzes with the cyanide solution?
Yeah.
I don't know of another kid who was subjected to that kind of Charles Dickens-like childhood. Do you?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things going on.
Johnny, let me ask you. When you were a kid, did you work with your dad?
Yeah, I did. Well, actually, my dad disappeared when I was real small and I had a stepfather.
So you kind of missed the story of a father and son. Is that really it? I'm not trying to be sarcastic. Is that why you asked?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So, Johnny, when you listen to my show, what is it that you want to hear? What? More of those stories in your own mind? Because what? It reminds you of a thing you missed in your life? Is that it?
Well, you know, it's part of, part of hearing your childhood. Yeah, it does, bring out something that interests me. But really, I listen to your show because, of the intelligence and the intellect that you have about the whole situation in our country.
I understand I have a good insight to things. I always have. I've been blessed with the ability to see things as they are without a lot of clouds around them. But I do think that at this stage of the day and of the month and of the year, most people have heard most of it at this time of the day. So I'm reluctant to just do hardcore, news at this point, Johnny.
Yeah, well, we all get sick and tired. A lot of us get sick and tired of hearing it, and we'd like to be refreshed with just some...
I understand. It's very hard to come up with new stories unless they're real, so I appreciate that. I mean, I don't want to do an old story about the one-breasted, man and the delivery to his house in Long Beach in the Godfather house and how shocked I was to see a man with one breast and a half a mustache from Ringling Brothers who bought odd objects as a kid delivering the goods to that house was strange, crazy, made me part of the man I am to see that there are a variety of individuals. So please don't lecture me about diversity.
Savage.